Blog Talk Radio.
You know how normally when we do a show, I got like, you know, I'm cutting in and out to clips and stuff. Today, I think I have one clip, which means I better, you know, work out these vocal cords here because I'm just going to be talking nonstop. I mean, every show was filled with me just yapping. That's the whole point. But more today than usual. So here's what we're going to discuss. We have GOP presidential candidate Scott Walker. Really showed us, number one, his priorities, and number two, everything wrong with politics. He's a criminal, basically. I mean, the guy is 100% guilty of corruption. He's guilty of bribery. And today we're going to call it what it is, man. We're going to call it what it is. And this isn't even an example that's as much of connecting dots as you have to do when you talk about other instances of corruption, because the entire American political system is run on legal bribery. But in this case with Scott Walker, it's like it's above and beyond that. I mean, it's just fucking rubbing it in your face. When you look at the programs that he cut and what he decided to prioritize in terms of where he wants to spend tax dollars, it's going to drive you up a fucking wall. So I want to actually kick it off with that, because that's an important story, and nobody's really covering it, or nobody's covering it in any serious way. I think it's just Think Progress, and that's pretty much it, which is pretty disheartening. Bernie Sanders is delivering a stone-cold stunner to everybody in the presidential race. So we recently discussed how he's beating the Republican candidates one-on-one. There's another person he's beating. What's her name again? I can't seem to think of it. I think it rhymes with Schmillery Flinton. You know who it is? Did I give it away? My bad. Jeb Bush is running on a platform of, indeed I am, George W. Bush. Oh, I will fuck you up, son. I'm going to destroy this guy. When you hear his comments about foreign policy, about what the ideal foreign policy is, oh my goodness. And then we got some stuff on the drug war, some stuff on prostitution. We got Christian fundamentalists giving smooth, lotiony hand jobs to Muslim fundamentalists. So it should be an interesting show. Let's kick it off here. And like I said, we'll get serious off the bat talking about corruption and Scott Walker. GOP presidential candidate and Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker just signed a bill to spend $250 million tax dollars on a new basketball arena for the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, before I continue here, I want to state for the record, I'm a gigantic NBA fan. I mean, and I always get my heart broken because I'm a Knicks fan, been a Knicks fan my entire life, and you know how that goes if you follow the NBA. But nobody loves basketball more than I do. I absolutely adore it. But having said that, that doesn't mean that I think the state should subsidize my hobby. I think that's ridiculous. You should prioritize things that are absolutely necessary. I mean, this is why I think the state should be involved in something like healthcare and something like education, and we say infrastructure and national defense, because it's supposed to be the things that are absolutely necessary. But here we have $250 million just handed over to build a new stadium. I mean, that's insanity. And not only that, they say that when you really account for all of the money that he's forking over to these people, it's closer to about $400 million. So they have weird, sneaky ways where they make it look like they're not giving money, but they are giving money. So in reality, the dollar figure is closer to $400 million. It's crazy, man. Now, normally, this wouldn't be too big of a deal. except that he's one of the governors who's been working tirelessly to cut social programs and gut education spending and reduce benefits for middle-class people. So that's why this is a big deal. In fact, he cut over $200 million from education. How are you going to cut over $200 million from education and then fork over $400 million for sports? It shows that your priorities are fucked up. But it's not just that his priorities are fucked up, because on top of that, it's corruption. So Think Progress explains here, they say, on the very day that Walker began pushing for taxpayers to foot much of the bill for the new arena, one of the team's owners donated $150,000 to his super PAC. The investor, John Hamms, has donated directly to Walker's past campaigns as well, to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars, and this year, Walker hired him as his national finance co-chairman. Another Bucks owner, Ted Kellner, gave $50,000 to Walker's super PAC. Aides to Walker have denied any pay-for-play connection. No, but see, that's the thing. I don't give a flying fuck if you deny it, because it's right in front of us. It's right there. There is a paper trail. We can see you gave him money, he did you favors. This doesn't require any kind of, you know, over-the-top interpretation or reading between the lines or trying to find a missing piece to the puzzle. No, it's right in front of us. It's right in front of us. They gave him money. He's like, what do you guys need? Oh, okay, as I cut education, you want me to give you money for the new arena? You got it. Now, meanwhile, what's missing in this whole equation? Oh, I don't know. Maybe the people of Wisconsin? You know, that's the whole idea behind a representative democracy, is that Scott Walker is supposed to represent the people. The people are his boss. He's effectively said, fuck that. They're not my boss. My boss is these assholes. My boss are the guys who give me money and help me run my campaign and get me elected that way, and then I'll turn around and help them out. And what ends up happening? A giant circle jerk of money and power, because money begets money, power begets power. He's in the good old boy circuit now, so whatever they want, he delivers, and vice versa. So this is the way politics really functions in America, and it's bribery. It's corruption. It's ridiculous when it boils down to it, and I think it's time we start calling it what it is. Unfortunately, Think Progress is the only outlet that I saw that covered this today. Now, they did a fantastic job, but we need to get the word out more, man. And we need to stop, you know, not being strong in our messaging. So, in other words, what we need to do is we just need to call it what it is. Scott Walker is a criminal. Scott Walker is a criminal. He engaged in bribery. He's corrupt. He should be brought up on charges. And we need to fight until we make it so that that is the case. Now, because of our fucked up laws, he might not even be able to get charged based off of this, which is ridiculous. But having said that, this is a perfect case for us to use to move forward in trying to get a constitutional amendment to get money out of politics. Because, again, when you read the facts of this story, you go, oh, I see exactly how that worked. You don't need to do any interpretation. It's just, oh, okay, he gave him money, he did what he wanted. That's, I mean, that back in the day, they used to have the good sense to hide it. They used to have the good sense to know, like, oh, my God, people will know I'm a sleazebag if I act like this. Now they're just like, ah, balls to the wall, whatever, dude, you saw me do it, whatever. Okay, if you want to play that game, let's play that game right back, man. We're not going to lay down and take it anymore. This is why that Princeton study said that there's a 0% correlation between what the people want and the policies we end up getting. The middle class and the poor have no effect on the legislation that gets enacted in America. None! None whatsoever! I mean, it would be horrendous if that number was like 38%, 42%. That would still be fucked up, because that means the majority of the time we don't get what we want in a representative democracy. Right now it's 0% correlation between what the rich want, what the donor class wants, and what they end up getting because of people like Scott Walker. So enough's enough. But left and right, we should all band together on this. I don't give a fuck if you're an ultra-conservative Republican, if you're a Tea Party person. If you're with me on this issue, you're my brother. And we need to band together and stand up and fight back and make it so that at least I can have a conversation and I can have a disagreement with somebody who's just my ideological opposite. At least if we're doing that, it wouldn't be a game. The way it works right now, it's dueling donors. hey, this donor gave that guy a shitload of money, that donor gave that guy a shitload of money, and now they're going to compete as to whose special interests are going to get exactly what they want when said person gets elected. I'm sick of that. Why should we do that? Why wouldn't we have a real debate? Why wouldn't we have a real discussion? Why wouldn't we have people that actually care about abortion and gay rights and the proper tax rate and the proper foreign policy? Why shouldn't we have an ideological discussion? Why shouldn't we be more philosophical in how we approach politics? As of right now, it's all a game. It's all a front for the corporatocracy. And a guy like Scott Walker is the perfect example of that. No fucking personality whatsoever. He's not bright. And he's this puppet. He's this figurehead to do whatever the fuck the rich want and do whatever the corporations want. I mean, he's the love child of our corrupt, rotting system. He's the embodiment of everything that's wrong with American politics. He's the guy who said to a billionaire donor, yeah, what we're trying to do with the unions is divide and conquer. So he just admitted it. He even realized he was on camera. He's like, yeah, no, what we're trying to do is fuck over working class people. Why would anybody vote for that guy? You shouldn't vote for that guy. But the thing is, the Democratic Party is not much better. They might have slightly less scary special interests, but they're still listening to the special interests. A lot of Democrats do take money from Wall Street. Look at Hillary Clinton. But even if it's not Hillary Clinton, even if it's some of the better Democrats, I mean, they have to, unfortunately, because of the way the system works, they have to take money from unions and lawyers and teachers and, slightly less scary special interests. How about we have no special interests? That's my proposal. That's my idea. Or actually, I don't want to steal the idea. Of course, other people have come up with it. But I'm trying to push that idea because I think that's what would make this country better. So the way to fight back is to, I think, either through the Move to Amend Amendment, which I believe Tom Hartman is affiliated with. He's another liberal radio host. That's one group that you can, you know, join with. Or Wolfpack is the one that TYT, the main show, is pushing for and working on. They're trying to end corporate personhood, get money out of politics, get clean elections by law. I really think that we need to go to the heart of the problem. And a simple law is not going to fix it because laws can be ignored or repealed pretty easily. So what we really need to do is go to the Constitution and amend the Constitution because it's much harder to ignore that. And if we can get to a place where we have even 20% more, you know, 60% more democracy, well, that would be a positive thing. So we need to fight for it. Okay. Now we'll go to Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders went from surging in the Democratic primary polls to absolutely laying the smackdown in the polls. So there's a new Boston Herald poll out, and they found that Bernie has eclipsed Hillary, and he's done it in dramatic fashion. Now, specifically, they're talking about New Hampshire here. This is specifically for the state of New Hampshire. So in March, Hillary had 44%, and Bernie had just 8%. Today, Bernie has 44%, and Hillary has 37%. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a historic charge. Now, not only that, people are more likely to say that they're excited, quote, excited by Bernie Sanders' campaign. So people are listening to what he's saying, and they're hearing the message, and they're going, oh, yeah, no, I believe this guy, and I'm behind him with his policy ideas. Now, what I find hilarious in this story is, you know what the response of the Hillary camp is? They say they're still more nervous about Biden possibly entering the race. I don't know how many times I've said this about Bernie Sanders, but I'm going to say it again right now. Iceberg. Dead ahead. The Hillary camp is still like, the establishment and the corporations are not with Bernie, so it's impossible for him to win. Now, it is harder for him to get national media coverage, and it is harder for him to rise in popularity as much as he is without the backing of these people, because 90 to 95% of the time, people who raise the most money end up getting elected, specifically for the Senate. But that still leaves, what, 5%, 10% of the time that doesn't happen? So, yeah, in a way, the odds are against him. But all the evidence you need that he's a special case is right in front of you, Hillary campaign. And you're still like, yeah, no, we're still scared of Biden. Biden ran once before.
More than that, actually.
What did he have the last time he ran? What was he polling at? I believe it was -86%. Now, I got nothing against Joe Biden. He's done some pretty good work. But, I mean, it's just misplaced priorities, and you see the establishment thinking. You see that they're like, well, come on. It's Bernie.
He's an old, decrepit white guy. Who can get excited by him? Oh, my God, he's beating us.
I mean, they're not going to learn, man. They're never going to learn. Hillary's campaigns have been historically pathetic. Because in 2008, what happened? And the Republicans anointed her in 08, too, and she got her ass handed to her.
They were like, oh, she's inevitable. Let's all discuss her and run against her.
And then they were like, oh, my God, a guy named Barack Hussein Obama, who's black, just beat her. How did that happen? Well, perhaps she's not as strong of a candidate as you think she is. See, again, it's the breakdown between the establishment and the people. And they have their bubble thinking, their bubble wisdom, and they don't break free from it. Now, I want to be clear. I'm not saying that Bernie Sanders is going to win. I'm saying that it's certainly a possibility. I believe that the hardest thing he'll have is to get through the primary. If he were to get through the primary, oh, watch out. Because the Republicans are not, they're not going to, I mean, who the fuck is going to be able to debate Bernie Sanders and come out looking better than him on the Republican side? Scott Walker, I'm not sure his IQ even registers if you test it. His IQ might be zero. Like somebody like that, Marco Rubio, who just said recently, ban all abortions! Rape, even in cases of rape, you got to ban those abortions. That guy's going to somehow come out looking better than Bernie Sanders in the debate. It's not going to happen. So the hardest thing he has is to get through the primary. And it is going to be difficult, don't get me wrong, but the polls indicate right now that he's moving in the right direction. Because he's actually saying something that fucking resonates. So, Noam Chomsky weighed in on this and on the candidacy of Bernie Sanders, and he tried to put it in perspective. Let me give you what he said here. He says, I'm glad that Sanders is running. A good way to bring important ideas and facts to people. His candidacy might also press the Dems a little in a progressive direction. In our system of bought elections, he has scarcely a chance of getting beyond the primaries. And even if by some miracle he were elected, he wouldn't be able to do anything, lacking any congressional representatives, governors, etc. As far as I can see, he's a thorn in the side of the Clinton machine, which is not a bad thing. Now, believe it or not, I think he's a little bit too pessimistic. But, I mean, it is true that it's an uphill battle. There's no doubt about that. But like I just said, 90 to 95% of the time, the person that raises the most money ends up winning, which means there's still a 5 to 10% chance that Bernie Sanders... Not only that, when you're talking about a presidential race, you get a lot more free press than you would if you were running in a Senate campaign, for example, or if you're running to be a congressman, so you're running for the House of Representatives. This is a point that Cenk has made over at TYT, and I think he's correct to point it out, that the dynamics for a presidential race are slightly different because when you're looking at a Senate race or a congressional race, very few people are paying attention anyway because not too many people are political junkies, never mind junkies just for their area. It's usually more national, so they're not as focused on specific races around them. And what happens is the person who raises the most money has more ads, gets on TV more, and then when you go into the voting booth, people go, oh, I heard that guy's name, and they vote for that person. It's a little different when it comes to presidential elections. And, I mean, if he were to get elected, now we're really, you know, out there here with our theorizing, but the idea that a guy like Bernie Sanders wouldn't have tactics to put the pedal to the metal, I mean... He would. I mean, Chomsky says he'd get nothing done. No, he wouldn't get nothing done. He'd get plenty done, man, because here's another thing about Bernie Sanders. He knows how to play politics. It's not just he's good on policy, which he is, but he can crack some fucking skulls. There's a guy named FDR. You know, FDR was famous for going out there and saying about the Wall Street bankers, for example, who caused the Great Depression, they say they hate me. I welcome their hatred. I mean, he was a guy who honestly, in some circumstances, went too far in the techniques that he used in order to get what he wanted. He would stack courts, for example. They'd be like, actually, you can't appoint another person to that court because that's against the rules. He's like, yeah, step aside. I'm going to do that. I don't give a fuck. So, and again, in principle, that's actually incorrect. He shouldn't do that because you're setting a bad precedent. What happens when a Republican dumbass tries to do something like that? So it's a bad thing in terms of looking at it from a procedural area. But the bottom line is there are ways to get shit done if you're a true progressive and you want to crack some skulls and you want to have some backbone. I mean, you can make a good argument to crush the Republicans in the next election if they don't do what you want in certain respects. You could try to get a Medicare for all system by going down that road. You could raise the minimum wage by doing that. You could get universal background checks for guns by doing that. Simply by proposing the legislation and shaming and mocking the people who vote against it because they're against 80, 90% of the American people, Bernie would be somebody who could get that done. So even when it comes to a guy like Noam Chomsky, who's brilliant in many respects, it's not just – I don't want people to be resigned to the idea that, well, he's just dragging the Democratic candidates to the left, and that's all he is. Maybe. Maybe not. But we never know what's going to happen. My point is we control our own destiny here, guys. I'm tired of the people who do the unilateral disarmament, and they say, we will lay down and just vote for Hillary because blah, 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 big bad Republicans or something. That's not fucking good reasoning. Well, she has a better chance of getting elected, and you don't want Republicans winning something. Yeah. What does that even mean? But she's worse on the issues, and that's all that matters. So don't vote for somebody who 80% sucks, 60 to 80% sucks, because you think you're supposed to vote for her. That's idiotic. Vote for the person who makes the most sense, is better on the policy specifics. So I don't want people to get this defeatist attitude. Of course he may not win. That doesn't mean you shouldn't vote for him. That doesn't mean you shouldn't keep fighting. And that doesn't mean you should give out false messages of, well, it'll come to an end. We don't know that yet. We don't know that yet, and we need to keep our chin up and keep fighting, because I'm sure if you ask people in March, hey, is there any way that Bernie will ever beat Hillary Clinton in a poll in New Hampshire? The answer would have been as follows. No way. And what happened? He did. So let's keep blowing people's minds. Okay, next. Jeb Bush. Let's go to Jeb Bush. Actually, I can't do this one now because it's going to require a lot of time. So let me jump ahead. I'll do this Planned Parenthood story real quick, because I can fit this in here. There's a great article in The Nation this week, and it's about how a war on Planned Parenthood isn't just a war on Planned Parenthood. It's actually a war on Republicans. And a war on conservative ideology. So a lot of people are like, what the fuck are you talking about? Well, let me explain here and then you'll see. So they explain how family planning clinics and reproductive services are under attack, as everybody knows, and they've been cut by 10% since obviously has tremendous downsides. But let me give you some more details, and then you'll see where the irony comes in. They say, quote, paradoxically, conservative officials' effort to defund and shutter family planning centers may actually be having the opposite effect than the purported goals of family values. One study found that greater access to a local family planning center may lead to less risky sexual behaviors among older youth. According to Guttmacher, gross potential savings from advertising all unintended pregnancies in 2010 would have been $15.5 billion. At $7 saved per dollar spent, family planning funds yield remarkable taxpayer value. So what they're saying there is you'll have less STDs, less risky sexual behavior, and over $15 billion saved if you fully fund family planning clinics. So it's fiscally responsible, and it's good because it limits STDs. How can you possibly disagree with that? And then here's the most important part. In 2013, the contraceptive services provided by clinics alone helped women to prevent some 1.4 million unintended pregnancies, thereby helping women avoid 705,000 unplanned births and 485,000 abortions. So, if you defund free clinics and Planned Parenthood like the Republicans are saying they want to do now, there would be about 485,000 more abortions every year. So, a war on Planned Parenthood is a war on conservative ideology. Increase the number of abortions. So, you might want to pump your brakes before you start screaming about shit you don't know about, right-wingers, because it'll end up worse even for your own stated goals. So, keep that in mind. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Jeb Bush outlines his foreign policy, and we're going to swing a fucking axe at his kneecaps because he says insane shit. All right, stay right there. All right, we're back. Everybody, take out your chainsaw, and turn it on. So we're going to get busy here. Jeb Bush gave a speech outlining his foreign policy, and it's 100% like his brother's. I mean, he should have just held up a sign that says, "I am George W. Bush," because that's what it is. So it's bad enough that he's disastrously incorrect with the direction that he wants to take the country, but he was also arrogant in his ignorance. So on the issue of Iraq, he said the following: "A winning strategy depends on maintaining unequal military strength, and we must not take that for granted. We do need to convey that we are serious, that we are determined to help local forces take back their country. Our unrivaled warfighters know that it is simply not enough to dispense advice and training to local forces, then send them on their way and hope for the best. It's a tough, complicated diplomatic and military proposition, even more so than the current situation in Iraq. But it can't be done. But it can be done. We saw in the Iraq surge how Islamic moderates can be pulled away from extremist forces, and the strategic elements in both cases are the same. We have to support local forces, and we must stay true to our word." All right, so let me decode the bullshit politician speak there for you. His solution is more of the problem. He wants more war. He wants more U.S. intervention. Let me repeat that first line again because it's very telling. You can read between the lines here yourself because it's kind of right on the surface. You're not even really reading between the lines. "A winning strategy depends on maintaining unequal military strength, and we must not take that for granted." What does he mean by that? Unequal military strength. So, well, the enemy, we know who the enemy is. It's ISIS in Iraq. It's people we dislike. We need unequal military strength there for us to win. So what does that mean? Well, we need to be there. And then he goes on to, you know, basically massage George W. Bush's surge. And he's putting forth this idea, which is a thought virus on the right, that the surge worked and it was fantastic. But wait. That's not true. If you look back, when they announced the surge and then violence increased, what did they say? Well, that proves that the insurgency is in its last throes, so the surge is working. Then violence would go down, and what did they say? Up, see, violence went down, the surge worked. Then the next month it would go back up, and what would they say? Up, see, the insurgency is in its last throes, it's working. So you set up a non-falsifiable claim. Whenever the violence gets worse, the surge is working. Whenever the violence gets better, the surge is working. But what's happening the entire time for sure? Our troops are there, and they're dying, and they're in the middle of a civil war. Why the fuck should they be in the middle of that civil war? The whole idea of the Iraq war was, oh my God, Saddam was responsible for 9/11. Well, he wasn't. We learned that wasn't true. But it's not like after we learned that was untrue, the government did the right thing and they said, you know, we should pull out. We started a war based on a false premise. We're going to get out now. They didn't do that. What do? They moved the goalposts. Well, he has weapons of mass destruction. Number one, no, he didn't. Number two, even if he did, you would have to prove that he was going to use them on America. And he wouldn't have, because he would have been blown to smithereens immediately if he did. So that was bullshit as well. And then what did they say? Well, he's just a bad guy. And there's a lot of bad guys in the world. In fact, we actively support a lot of bad guys. We supported Saddam. We supported him at the height of his atrocities. It's so ironic that we said, oh, this guy's a dictator. He's been doing atrocities. You didn't add the final part of that. With our support, we gave him a lot of the weapons. We sat there and said, oh, he's our boy, as he was killing Kurds. And God, it's so hypocritical in so many different ways. But here's my question to Jeb Bush. To what ends do you want to stay there? What's your goal? When would you ever declare victory and get out? And what's his answer? Either he wouldn't have an answer, or he'd say, when we defeat ISIS and jihad. How the fuck are you going to defeat the ideology of jihad, the ideology of Muslim fundamentalism? You're not going to defeat it because it's not possible to defeat it any more than it's possible to defeat the ideology of burglary or assault or murder or rape. You have to contain it. You can't defeat it. But if you say we need to stay there until we defeat it, what does that mean? Unending war. We're going to be there forever. And by the way, the facts show what? We've made the problem worse. It's just like the war on drugs. They declare the war on drugs and say, we're going to try to eradicate drugs. That's what we're going to do. What happened? Fast forward a couple decades. There's more drugs now, and people are more likely to take drugs now, and we've wasted over $1 trillion in the process. So it hasn't worked. By any objective measure, it has not worked. You declared war on terror to wipe out terrorists, and now there are more terrorists today. So you failed according to your own goddamn standards. But what's your solution? Say, let's do more of the problem. So, and then here's where you open the door for a conspiracy theorist to come in and talk about how, well, maybe that was never the goal in the first place. You know, I mean, let's face it, a lot of people do make a lot of money from these wars. So perpetual war is not a bad thing if you're in Honeywell or if you're with Raytheon or Halliburton or KBR. In fact, you love that. And not only that, I mean, America is an imperialist power, and we do jack natural resources from virtually everyone. I mean, if you look at our history of interventions post-World War II, it's not like we invaded all those countries because, oh, we're so altruistic and we care so deeply about those people. No. We saw personal gain in it, so we did it. So, for example, the classic example is, do you know where the term banana republic came from? We overthrew a government in South America because the Chiquita Banana Company wanted the bananas. So we said, okay, your government's gone. Now we're taking the bananas. Just topple the government, take the bananas. Happens all the time. All the time we did shit like that. We would overthrow democratic leaders and put in fascists, dictators, and say, oh, no, we're doing that to preserve freedom. We didn't just take away freedom, even though you did. No, we're preserving freedom. Why? Because the big bad communists. The communists are the evil ones. We're the good ones. So to avoid communism, we had to put in our own fascist dictator. Please, man, what a joke this is. And you still have idiots who believe in American imperialism and act like, no, we're the good guys by definition. Whatever we do is right. No, it's not right. What if you are the problem here? But it gets more pathetic. You ready for this? Who does he blame for ISIS? Take a guess. Do I even need to say it? Quote, that premature withdrawal was the fatal error, creating the void that ISIS moved in to fill, and that Iran has exploited to the full. So he's blaming Obama, that's clear. But he's making the same mistake Scott Walker made and all these other idiot Republicans made. He doesn't even know the difference between a Sunni and a Shia. He's like, yeah, this is helping ISIS and Iran. But ISIS and Iran are enemies. What are you talking about? They're not working together. Iran is fighting ISIS. Iran is Shia. ISIS is fundamentalist Sunni. How do you not know this? He's just like his brother. Everything is exactly like his brother. And by the way, you're blaming Obama and Hillary Clinton. What about your brother? I love how in the Republican mind, it's okay to do revisionist history, but only if you're revising Obama's history. So you don't actually go back to the root of the problem when it started. You go, well, let's move the clock up to like 2010 and blame Obama. Because all the withdrawal made it worse, and so you put it all on him. But wait, if your brother never invaded in 2003, never got rid of Saddam Hussein, never de-bathified the government, so got rid of the relatively secular Sunnis, what would happen? You would have never had ISIS. Of course you would have never had ISIS. You want to know why? How did ISIS get so much territorial success? It wasn't the religious zealot idiots who were in ISIS, because they're fucking idiots. I mean, look at the shit they believe. They're morons, right? No, it was because of the Ba'athist generals. Saddam's generals know how to be generals. They know how to take over territory. They know that terrain. They know exactly what they're doing in that respect. There are letters of generals, Ba'athist generals who teamed up with ISIS, where in the letters they say, yeah, I don't believe in any of this fundamentalist garbage, but we're teaming up with them because they wanted Sunnis to get control again, take over the same region again. Because what did the U.S. do after we got rid of Saddam, a Ba'athist, a secular Sunni, who do we put in? Maliki, a Shia. So you pissed off the entire Sunni population. The Ba'athists teamed up with the fundamentalist Sunnis, became ISIS, took over all this territory. And who do you blame? Goddamn Obama. But Obama didn't do the 2003 invasion. You did. You did. And just to be clear here, I, of course, am not blaming the ideology of jihad or fundamentalist Islam on America. That would be ridiculous. Of course, that ideology would exist either way. My point is, specifically in the region in Iraq and the rise of ISIS, so that problem has been exacerbated as a result of bad policy on our part, and I think you can't argue against that. But actually, the only person who does try to argue against it is Jeb Bush and George Bush and the neocons. They cause the problem, and then they get up there and start talking about what they think the solution is. No, I think you can sit this one out, and I don't think America is going to vote for you because you are now officially running on a platform of, I am George W. Bush. So I'll ask you guys, do you want to elect George W. Bush again? Okay. Pretty pissed off about that story, if you couldn't tell. It's like, sit down and shut up, son. You're not legitimate. Like, you're not a serious person. You know dick about, I almost said you know dicks about foreign policy. He doesn't know anything about politics in any way. Like, I'm embarrassed when guys like Jeb Bush, part of a dynasty family, like, try to rise up through the ranks. Like, it's obvious he's only there because of nepotism and because of his family name and because he sells out to the establishment. And he doesn't know anything about foreign policy. It's so sad. All right, let's move on to, Jesus, I'm giving you some heavy-hitting shit right now because we're going to move from that to a story about the drug war. The New York Times has a really, really well-done article out today about the absolute abysmal failure of the drug war. So I want to give you a segment of the article here and then try to put it in perspective. So they talk about how a town called Chilapa has been overrun by masked gangsters for a week or so, and it's because rival cartels are fighting for control of a drug trafficking route. And naturally, this is affecting the lives of the 31,000 or so citizens who live there. There are some people who are truckers who just have normal jobs who are like, I'm fucking scared to drive down the road because I might get killed. So this is a serious, serious problem. Here's what they say. Quote, for years, the United States has pushed countries battling powerful drug cartels, like Mexico, to decapitate the groups by killing or arresting their leaders. The pinnacle of that strategy was the capture of Mexico's most powerful trafficker, El Chapo, who escaped in spectacular fashion last month from a maximum security prison. And while the arrests of kingpins make for splashy headlines, the result has been a fragmenting of the cartels and spikes in violence as smaller groups fight for control. It seems that each time the government cuts down a cartel, multiple other groups, sometimes even more vicious, spring up to take its place. A professor at the National Autonomous University of Mexico who specializes in security issues says, in Mexico, this has been a copy of the American anti-terrorism strategy of high-value targets. What we have seen with that strategy of high-value targets is that Al-Qaeda has been diminished, but a monster appeared called the Islamic State. With the cartels, it has been similar. So we actually spoke about this recently. There are now what they're calling mega cartels in Mexico. And they basically have their own little paramilitaries. They have, one of them has their own weapons factory. I mean, it's fucking insane stuff. They were like shooting rocket launchers at a military helicopter. I mean, just insane stuff you never would have guessed could have happened. But understand, guys, and this is the point of the article here, that's a direct result of our poor policy to combat this war on drugs. So they think, well, if we get rid of the leader, what? What do you think happens?
Well, everybody decides that they're going to get out of that business and get into babysitting or accounting.
But that doesn't happen. That's fucking fairy tale land. I mean, most people should be able to tell you if you sit down in a meeting and you come up with that strategy. I think most intelligent people would say, really, that's your goal? Just get rid of one guy, the top guy, and everybody will go, oh, now I don't know what to do. Let's go get into a different business. No, no. What happens is, then you set up cartel fights. People will try to fill that power vacuum, become the leader themselves, and in the process of doing that, there's more gunfights, there's more violence, there's more death, there's more instability, and the problem of drugs remains. Why? Because it's a genuine market demand that people have to get high. Don't believe me? Check the alcohol sales numbers. How about that? I don't know why people think, like, well, if you get rid of the drugs, people will stop trying to alter their consciousness. Right. And people, you know, if you tell them stop pissing, they're going to stop. By golly, the government ordered it. Except some things are very human. Sex is human. Breathing air is human. Pissing, shitting is human. Changing your consciousness is something that's been done by the overwhelming majority of societies throughout history. But they're just, kill the leader and then it'll be okay. But you made it worse. You made it worse. They're telling you you made it worse. You have turf wars now between mega cartels. You take out the head guy, somebody else is going to try to become the head guy, and they're going to do it through bloodshed and violence. So, I mean, they're right to point out that this is like the anti-terrorism strategy. So we started the war on terror thinking we're going to eradicate terror. What happened? Over a decade later, it's worse! There are more jihadists today than there were then! Because you had a poor strategy to begin with. You ended up killing so many civilians that you further radicalized the region, and for every one Al-Qaeda person you killed or one jihadist you killed, you created 10 more! And this is what we're talking about here. Oh, you killed the leader of a drug cartel. Oh, look, there's a new leader. So how do you really combat this? Now, this is where you lose a lot of people because it's counterintuitive. But if you legalize drugs, tax drugs, and regulate drugs, you know what happens? You put the cartels out of business. They go, we can't actually compete on the marketplace with, you know, people selling drugs through a legal process and selling it for cheaper than we are. So you go out of business. Who wants to go buy from the guy in the back alley with an AR-15 or an Uzi when they could go to their local store, their pharmacy, and say, okay, let me get a dime bag or something like that? Nobody would go to the guy who's selling it illegally. Why would you do that? It doesn't make any sense. And understand, man, this isn't just like, oh, that's just Kyle giving his opinion again. No, it's based on history. Look at prohibition in the United States. When we had prohibition of alcohol, what happened? The mafia became incredibly powerful. Why? Because they made a shitload of money. How? Because alcohol was illegal, so who filled the market void? The mafia. The mafia became the drug cartels of the past. Like today what the drug cartels are, that's what the mafia was back then. The mafia said, we're going to step in, we're going to fill this market demand, we're going to smuggle in the alcohol, and they got filthy fucking rich, and there was a spike in crime as a result of it. When you legalized alcohol, then the mafia couldn't compete, and they had to find a new way to make money. Same thing here. If you legalize drugs, then the cartels will be put out of business, and they'll need to find another way to make money. But if you keep drugs illegal and you just kill the leaders of the cartels, it's just going to be endless bloodshed and endless turmoil and continued turf wars. Look, again, I want to be clear, man. I'm not just giving my opinion here. I'm telling you historical facts. I'm telling you some things that other experts have said that they know will work. I mean, if you look at even just decriminalization of drugs, look at what happened in Portugal. I mean, they've even had drug use drop as a result of that. See, some people say, well, when you legalize drugs, you're going to lose a generation because people are just going to do fucking drugs all day. Except that didn't happen when they decriminalized drugs in Portugal. Drug use rates went down. So there's a better way to address these problems. And then on top of that, you also have the added benefit of, I don't know, believing in freedom as opposed to just saying, we believe in freedom, but we should lock you up if you smoke a joint. Well, then you don't believe in freedom. You can't have it both ways. It's one or the other. Either you want to lock the guy up for the joint, or you believe in freedom. It's not both. It's a contradiction. So you increase freedom, and you stop the evil drug cartels from getting more powerful and killing more people. There are no downsides to legalizing. It's a fact. Okay, next. Jesus, man, I'm spending way too long on a lot of these stories. All right, we'll do one more, and then we'll take a final break here. This one is also on drugs, but slightly different. Not necessarily the cartels involved in this one. The Daily Beast is reporting on the issue of drug addiction and some problems that arise as a result of pregnant mothers who are struggling with it. So here's what they say. In response to a heroin epidemic, some Cincinnati hospitals are starting a new program to test all mothers or their infants for opiates, not just those deemed to be at risk based on their background. The program is intended to help physicians identify newborns who could suffer withdrawal symptoms. Mothers who test positive will be referred to treatment while their newborns receive extended care. Okay, now, that's the progressive approach, and here's what the barbarians are doing. Quote, in light of the spike in heroin use, the CDC recommends that states increase access to treatment for drug addiction. But some states seem to believe that the best way to help newborns is by threatening their addicted mothers with jail time instead of providing treatment and social support. In 2014, a Tennessee law went into effect allowing pregnant women who take narcotics to be charged with aggravated assault, which could result in a 15-year prison sentence. Now, that's not all. According to the Guttmacher Institute, there are at least 10 states where they take a punitive approach to pregnant drug addicts as opposed to a rehab approach. See, this is the problem, guys. This is the problem when you don't give a fuck about empirical reality and what's the best way to handle a situation, and you want to just take your gut reaction and your knee-jerk feeling and implement that, then you have fucking chaos and you have barbaric, draconian policies like, oh, a drug-addicted pregnant woman, throw her in jail. How is that in any way, shape, or form a solution? I mean, I see only downsides to that. You give somebody a criminal record. You make it so that when they get out, they can't get a job to support the baby. You make it so that when they get out, they probably go right back on drugs. You make it so that when they're in prison, they go through withdrawal cold turkey. And when they go through withdrawal cold turkey, it's not just going to have negative effects on them. It also might have negative effects on the fetus that they plan to carry to term. There are a trillion and one problems with it. And furthermore, it's not a criminal problem. It's just not a criminal problem. If somebody truly is addicted and they can't help it, and you know they do drugs when they're pregnant, obviously that person needs medical help. They need an intervention. But no, we have some people who say just out of sight, out of mind, just throw her in jail, lock her up. 15 years for assault in some cases. Seriously? No, but what's so ironic is that these states too that are doing it, like Tennessee, some of these states are some of the most Christian states in America, some of the most religious states in America. We believe in Jesus. We believe in his message of redemption and taking care of people and the sick and the downtrodden and whatnot. And then here they have a perfect case where they can implement their belief, and they do the exact opposite. Well, here's a woman, poor woman struggling with drug addiction, and she's got a kid coming, and she needs help. She needs rehab. She needs to get back on her feet. She needs a plan here. No, fuck it. We don't want to help at all. Just throw them in jail. Throw them in jail. And by the way, in the long run, you're probably going to spend more money going this way, going in this direction, than you are if you actually have programs set up to help these women. So, guys, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I'm going to keep saying it. Oftentimes, whether it's social policy, economic policy, you look across the board, the liberal ideas are just superior. You have a better outcome as a result of them if you implement them. If you set up a rehab program for women in this situation, if you actually treat them like human beings, the outcomes are significantly better, and you're going to make it so that she can have a better life and the kid can have a better life. When everything, you know, is you treat it like you're living in the year 1200 and everything is throw them in jail, lock them up, throw away the key, don't give a fuck about them, well, obviously the outcomes are going to be worse. Obviously the quality of life in your state is going to be lower, and obviously you're just shittier people. So we got to wake up, man. It's 2015, and we still have 10 states that maybe, maybe not will lock you up if you're drug addicted and you're pregnant. What kind of shit is that, man? I mean, that's so out of bounds that it's upsetting that I even have to talk about it and cover this story today, because you would think that we should be past this. People in the rest of the modern world are looking at us like, yeah, you guys really are half stupid. I don't know why you're doing this. Let's get our shit together and let's set up a federal program and federal laws that address this situation and make it so that people get rehab and help when they need it. Okay. All right, we're going to take a break here, and then when we come back, we're going to get into some religious stuff here. I don't even want to give you a tease on this one because it'll fuck it up, because I'll just have to give away the story if I give a tease. So just know, okay, here's how I could tease it. Scientology is coming up. We will be talking about Scientology, and it's a disaster. Then we have Christian fundamentalists hopping in bed with Muslim fundamentalists as they pretend like they're oh so against them. We've seen this time and time again. And what happens when a senior citizen is trafficking cocaine? That is a fucking awesome story, but it's also depressing. So stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. I'm not sure about
when the Neptune, when the doggy dog's in the spit, you know he's in tune with the season. Come in, baby, tell me why you leaving. tell me if it's weed that you need. If you want to breathe, I got the best weed out of seed. Ain't nobody tripping, VIP, they can't get it. If something go wrong, then you know we get the trip.
I you Los Angeles, where the helicopter got cameras. Just to get a glimpse of our chucks and our khakis and our bouncing car. You with your friend, right?
Yeah.
She ain't trying to bring over no man, right?
No.
She ain't got to be in the distance. She can get high all in an instant.
Let's end on a couple interesting notes here. Hold on, let's see. Towards the end, it gets brighter, but this is a Scientology story. It's both really, really, funny, but also super depressing because the government is just apparently a group of idiots. You'll see what I mean. Brandy Zadrozny of the Daily Beast wrote a fascinating article about taxpayer-funded research going to religious cures. So already it's a red flag. Anytime some religious organization comes to you and you're the government and they say, oh, we can help on with this medical thing, your initial reaction should be, ha, there's the door, leave. Because it's never the case. I mean, they're in the business of religion. They're not in the business of medicine. If they were, they'd be scientists or doctors, and they'd have degrees. But they don't. They make stories up. There's a big difference. In fact, that's the polar opposite. Scientists have to base what they do on information and data. Religious people are like, yeah,
There was a burning bush and a talking snake and stuff. You believe me, right? No, I don't. So apparently the Department of Defense forked over about $634,000 in 2009 alone to Scientologists to see if they could cure Gulf War Syndrome. All right, we've wasted a lot of money on a lot of stupid things the U.S. government has, as have other governments as well. This may be the biggest waste of money. You gave money to Scientologists to try to cure Gulf War Syndrome? Scientologists. Aren't those the people with, you know, Xenu and everybody gets a planet when they die? Or actually, I think, is the planet thing Mormonism? No, that might be Scientology. See, I get my silly fairy tales mixed up because they're all so ridiculous. But you gave Scientologists, by the way, a lot of people consider it a cult. I mean, I think all religions are, in essence, cults. But there's an extra layer of absurdity and an extra layer of trouble with Scientologists because they really intimidate and crack down on and get dangerous with people who leave Scientology, and they pester people nonstop, and they shake them down for money. In fact, I think it was in the recent documentary, the HBO documentary, they said that in Britain they don't even consider it a religion. They officially categorize it as a cult because it is a cult. Again, I would classify them all as cults, but point is Scientology has some extra negative characteristics associated with it, and they have a terrible history linked with it. Again, other religions do too, but I think you guys get my point. Scientology today is super-de-duper cultish. So she explains, quote, "The project has faced major delays, but now is finally reaching its home stretch. The researchers say results are expected next year, and Grant claims some 90% of Gulf War vets are reporting health gains. But critics say the soldiers are merely reaping the benefits of plain old exercise and perspiration, and that Scientologists plan to use the skewed results to validate L. Ron Hubbard's quack theories and even push for a Nobel Peace Prize." Or, I'm sorry, it just says a Nobel Prize. So here's what they do. It's called the Purification Rundown, and the con artist L. Ron Hubbard himself came up with the idea. And what you're supposed to do is detox in a sauna, then you do aerobic exercise, and then you take niacin, which is vitamin B3. And then they say that cures your, quote, spirit, and you get better from your Gulf War syndrome. Now, here's the thing. This is pure placebo. So you do get a natural bump in mood from exercise and perspiration. So there's that, which is real, and then on top of that, there's the placebo effect that some people say, oh, well, I'm proactively doing something to fix myself, so therefore it's got to work, and you're giving yourself permission to feel a little bit better. But here's the thing. That doesn't mean it's an actual cure. Of course it's not a cure. I mean, if you come up with some bullshit treatment and you go into a cancer ward and you give that bullshit treatment to somebody and they self-report feeling better the next 2 or 3 days, but they still die and they still have cancer, you didn't just cure them. What you did is something that embodied the placebo effect. So they gave $634,000 for Scientologists to get involved in medical research, but they don't do medicine. Now, it also gets even worse because they're apparently in the place where they went to look into this, they had pictures of the 9/11 victims on the wall, and they were patting down their foreheads with towels, and the residue on their forehead was, like, you know, orange and gray and stuff. And they would tell people, like, oh, see, from all the perspiration they did, they're sweating out the toxins, and that's what you're doing here. When you're doing exercise, you're getting rid of all the toxins, and then it will purify your spirit, and you got to follow L. Ron Hubbard's plan. And it's all a bunch of horseshit. Anytime you hear anybody talking about toxins, run for the hills. Because that's the go-to bullshit standard pseudoscience quackery. well, you know, if you do this and you do that and you take my not backed up by studies pill, well, you're purifying your body of toxins. No, you are the con artist. What's hilarious is that oftentimes it'll be the alternative medicine people or religious people who talk about how, well, I mean, modern medicine, these guys are the con artists. All they care about is profit. Now, obviously, there are systemic flaws with American healthcare and American pharmaceutical companies. I cover them more than anybody else. But that doesn't then mean that any asshole who says they have the answers, they do have the answers, because they don't have the answers. If they're associated with alternative medicine and/or a religion, they definitely are even bigger con artists than the pharmaceutical companies. Because at least with the pharmaceutical companies, some of the shit they sell we know works. Whether it's antibiotics or whether you break your leg and you need morphine or Vicodin or whatever the fucking case is, at least they have some shit that works. They may price gouge the fuck out of you, and they may have bought the government, and all that's negative, and we can fight against that. But at least they're on the right track. Whereas with religious cures and alternative medicine cures, it's all bullshit. Kevin Trudeau, remember this guy? He's the guy who said natural cures, oh, what, they're not telling you to cure stuff. He was the con artist. He's in jail now. So everybody thought, oh, here's the guy who's the truth teller who's exposing all the problems with the pharmaceutical companies. Meanwhile, he wasn't the truth teller. He was the one that was ripping you off when you were buying his shitty book where he made shit up. The same thing with these Scientologists, and they convinced the government. They convinced the government to give them money. God, if I was in charge, man, I would only have verified scientific minds, people with degrees, researchers, doctors make decisions on what kind of treatment we should explore, because apparently when you leave it to the Department of Defense, they have no fucking clue what they're doing, and they'll just blow your money. Okay. Next. In a historic vote, Amnesty International decided to come out in favor of the decriminalization of prostitution. So that's tremendous news. It's big news. But what's incredibly disheartening about it is the backlash that they've received. So some have said that they threaten to, quote, lose credibility over this move. And the AFP is reporting, quote, ahead of the vote, the Coalition Against Trafficking in Women, or CATW, penned an open letter saying that Amnesty's name would be severely tarnished if it approved the policy. The open letter was signed by women's rights groups, doctors, and stars, including Meryl Streep, Kate Winslet, and Emma Thompson. The CATW executive director said, there's no logic behind the premise that in order to protest those who are exploited, you have to decriminalize the exploiter. It makes no sense. Well, actually, it does make sense. It makes perfect sense. And empirically, we know it works. See, it really upset me that people were mad at this move by Amnesty International, because it's not like Amnesty International sat around and said, how do we get, like, old, creepy, perverted guys happy? I know, let's decriminalize prostitution. That obviously was not their line of thinking or their reasoning when they made this decision. Why did they make this decision? They made this decision because they know it would lead to better social outcomes, and you can protect the women better, can fix crime and many other social ills associated with it because it's illegal. Now, again, understand this isn't merely opinion. I mean, go look, do a comparison between places that have illegal prostitution and places that have it legalized, and you tell me which one is better. So, for example, there's a place called Hunts Point. Prostitution is illegal in the area, and you have terrible STD transmission rates. You have violent pimps involved in it. You have the women are treated horribly. It's just a terrible, terrible thing to know exists. Whereas if you look at just outside of Las Vegas, for example, prostitution is legal. Go talk to them. See how they feel at the Bunny Ranch about their job. They'll tell you how they feel. They're not hiding it. Now, you can say, I don't believe you to them, but then I think you're an asshole because you're just not taking them at their word. You're calling them all liars. Really? Every single one who works at the Bunny Ranch is a liar? Is that what's happening? No, they'll tell you. They say, look, I get paid well. I have benefits. we can form a union if we want. We have decent hours. We make a fuckload of money. I mean, and it's safer. They test them all the time for STDs. They make sure that they're safe and they're healthy. So when you decriminalize something or when you legalize something, you can tax it and regulate it and make it so that everybody's better off. What happened? You just pushed it underground, and by definition now only criminals will be involved in that marketplace, which is why you get violence, which is why you get more STDs, and which is why the women are grossly underpaid and undervalued. So there are people who mean well, and they're trying to be do-gooders, people like I just named Meryl Streep, Kate Winslet, and Emma Thompson. But the sad thing, and it breaks my heart to say this, but they're ignorant on the topic. They don't know how this manifests in real life. And again, I have to make the comparison because it's screaming off the page here. The same comparison is with alcohol and with the drug war. I mean, there was a time when alcohol was illegal because, hey, alcohol leads to many social ills. And when they made it illegal, the problems got worse. There was more crime. The mafia got incredibly powerful because they monopolized it. The criminals made money because you banned it. With drugs, the drug cartels in Mexico right now are flourishing. I mean, they have mega cartels now in Mexico. It's a narco state. Why? Because you ban drugs. If you legalize drugs, you get rid of the cartels. You put them out of business. How do you put the violent, destructive, terrible pimps out of business? You legalize, tax, and regulate prostitution and make it so that you get rid of the societal taboo. Why is it that so many liberals have bought into the Victorian, puritanical, backwards-ass ideology that sex is evil? That's a conservative idea. It's not a liberal idea. The liberal idea is, oh, that's part of human nature, and it is what it is. I mean, what are you going to do? What are you going to try to fight it? That's what the Republicans try to do when they say, no birth control. They're trying to fight human nature. This is a case where liberals are trying to fight human nature. Don't fuck, don't pay for sex, don't let anybody be involved in that industry in any way because I don't like it. Well, you're fighting human nature. You're not going to win that fight. If you legalize, tax it, and regulate it, all the social ills are reduced and the outcomes are better. So I want the women to make more money. I want the women to be healthier. I want a scenario where, you know, people are not risking their lives to be involved in that market. And the way to bring that about is to legalize, tax it, and regulate it, or at the very least decriminalize it. And unfortunately, I should say, fortunately, Amnesty International is now acknowledging that. But there's a tremendous backlash, and I think the answer to this backlash is simply education, to let everybody know. We have real answers in this field. We know what has better outcomes. So hopefully with education, we can change people's minds and get the right policies implemented in more places. Okay. Now let's go to the Christian fundamentalists. Rick Wiles is a lunatic Christian fundamentalist, and he stopped by the con man televangelist Jim Baker show to share his brilliant theory on Muslim terrorism.
And what John is saying is he believes the Muslims are being sent into this country to bring punishment to those nations. And I looked at it, the United States, Canada, went all the way down through Central and South America, and the countries, there are some countries that have zero abortion.
Right.
And they also have zero Muslim population. And then when you get to the United States and Canada, you have the highest level of Muslim immigration and the highest level of abortion. And I believe they're going to be used to extract vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
I should say to extract revenge, punishment on this country for aborting the baby.
Okay, so wait. Then don't you agree with the Muslim terrorists? But that's the theory you're outlining. You're saying, well, abortion is so terrible and so wrong and so immoral
that God sent Muslim fundamentalists to get revenge, to correct our immoral Western asses. That's the argument you're making. That's the argument you're making. So do you not even realize that what you're doing is you're saying, we kind of agree with the Muslims? And this goes back to something we've spoken about time and time again, which is that whether or not Christian fundamentalists realize it, they're buddy-buddy with the Muslim fundamentalists. I mean, you go on policy issue for policy issue, and you tell me the connecting tissue here. Who is it that hates gays? I love how you have conservative Christians always try to connect liberals and Muslims together. Like, oh, yeah, they're working together. The fuck are you talking about? I couldn't disagree more with Muslim fundamentalists. I disagree with them on virtually everything. But you agree with them on many things. You know, oh, you hate gays, they hate gays. You want a theocracy, an American theocracy, a Christian theocracy. They want a theocracy as well, and that's what they're actively pushing for. You are militaristic. You think violence is the answer to everything. So do they. And remember, you know, you might say, well, Kyle, you're being unfair to them. They've never come out and said explicitly, like, well, yeah, we're kind of with them. Not true. There was a caller into Brian Fisher's radio show. Remember Brian Fisher, also an evangelical, fundamentalist Christian, super far right wing. Somebody called into his show and said, you know, bro, I've been thinking about it, and I think living under Muslim law, living under Sharia law, is preferable to what we have now in America. And he laid out exactly why, and he said a lot of the things I'm saying right now. Here are the things that they agree with us on. And Brian was like, you know, I don't necessarily disagree with you. So, again, this is classic Republican projection. They do this time and time and time again. They say, oh, it's the liberals and the Muslims are working together, and they're the problem, and we're the good guys. But the reality is, the liberals are the ones who are against militarism, are for gay rights. And you go down the list, all of their policy beliefs are counter to not only Muslim fundamentalists, but to you, and you guys agree. And I like the other things that are made up there, too. He's like, you know, I saw some countries have zero abortion. Which countries? Which countries are you talking about? No abortion, I promise, I swear. What statistics? Where did you get your statistics from? They just make everything up. And did you know, by the way, according to the Guttmacher Institute, there are countries that have banned abortion, and in those countries, there is actually more abortion than in countries where it's legal. You want to know why? Because you pushed it underground. Women and people in general are going to need those services one way or the other. But if you ban it and you push it underground, well, then you make it a worse situation for everybody because the abortion is going to happen either way. But now you made it so that a woman can get an infection because it happened with a fucking coat hanger with some shady dude in a back alley, and now she may die as well. So these are just facts, man. These are just statistics that there are more abortions in some countries where they've actually banned abortion. So the best situation to have is where it's safe, legal, and rare, as the old saying goes. And another way to combat abortion is what? The best way to combat abortion. Contraception, condoms, the pill, IUDs, free clinics, sex education. All the things the liberals are for would stop unwanted pregnancies and STDs and abortions. But again, what do you want to do? You want to live in fantasy land. We don't want to have any of those things, and we don't want teens to ever have sex, and we don't want any unwanted pregnancies and no abortions. Interesting. Well, perhaps you should move to Narnia, because there you might be able to implement some of your ideas. All right, next. Josephine King is a 92-year-old woman from Georgia, and she was kicked out of her church after more than 50 years as a member because she didn't give enough money. Raw Story explains, she received a letter from Bain Bridges First African Baptist Church informing her that she was no longer a member because she failed to maintain constant and consistent financial and physical participation. Okay, now, this is already gross, but are you ready for why that's the case? She was sick. She's 92 years old. You know what happens when you're 92 years old? You get sick. They're like, well, she hasn't been here enough. She hasn't given us enough money. So she's kicked out. You know, perhaps if you actually gave a shit about some of the stuff said by that guy who you say you love, Jesus, when something like this happens to a 92-year-old member of your church, she's ill, perhaps you're the one that should give money to her. You're the one that should give support to her. You're the one that should lift her up and comfort her and let her know that the community is there for her. But you didn't do that. And you want to know why you didn't do that? Because what you're doing is running a scam. See, this is an inconvenient fact that a lot of religious people don't like to hear, but at its core, all religion is a scam. They're doing, as Bill Maher says, is they're selling an invisible product. They're selling you hope. They're selling you redemption. They're letting you know you're on the good team and you're going to be okay in the afterlife. I got your back. But in reality, what they're really selling is Mother Goose. What they're really selling is Narnia, fucking Candyland, you know, fairy tales, myths, nonsense. So what they're doing is they're exploiting you. They're giving you a fake existential support and taking money. By the way, you know who else does something like that? The mafia. The old mafia trick is, you know, you go into a new bakery or something and you say, you know, we could protect you. Me and Vinny over here could protect you. There's a lot of people that break in and shit around here. But in order for us to protect you, you got to give us 8% of your earnings. If you don't give us 8% of your earnings, we're not saying that your window's going to get broke and your money's going to get stolen out of the register tonight, but it might happen. And then what happens? They collect their money, and as long as you pay, well, then they won't fuck your shit up. But, you know, if you stop paying, well, then they might fuck your shit up. In case it's not as extreme because they're not actually doing physical property damage to her and her property. But what are they doing? They're saying, well, we're now kicking you out of the club because you didn't give us money and you didn't show up when you were sick and when we should have been there for you. And this isn't an uncommon thing. There was a story from Florida recently. A church sent $1,000, an $1,000 collection notice, I should say, to a single mother who failed to tithe. You know, maybe she needs that money to feed her fucking kid. You ever thought of that? Maybe she needs your support. You're supposed to be the community. You're supposed to be the one looking out for her. Maybe she needs you right now, but no. You send a bill to her to say you give the pastor money because the pastor needs a new car. No, I'm fed up to here, man, with religion and with its bullshit. Now, obviously, people can do bad in the name of religion. They can do good in the name of religion. Nobody's denying that. But my main disagreement with it is it's just not correct. What they're saying to you is not accurate. So if you're somebody who gives a shit about truth, why would you belong to a club, any club, that's based on flat-out lies? That's based on myths. And then along with that, you know, there's some baggage. So all the negative shit that your group has ever done is kind of dragged along with you. If you're in the Catholic Church, well, you have to own up to the fact that the leadership was systematically fucking little boys' booty holes recently. Do you really want to be in that group? I don't want to be in that group. And again, I'm not blaming the moderate religious people for the fundamentalists in their own religion. But what I am saying is, if you're being intellectually honest, and if it's not just about fitting in socially, oh, yay, I have friends if I go here, then why the fuck would you be religious? If you know it's untrue, and you know that oftentimes bad is done in the name of it, why would you be religious? And this goes for all religious people. They're scamming you. They're shaking you down. They don't give a fuck about you. At least join a, you know, whatever, a club where you play sports every weekend or go play bingo on a Friday night or some shit. There are other groups that are based on something real or fun and they give a shit about you. Those are much better than any religion. Okay. Next. A 91-year-old retired surgeon has been charged with importing cocaine hidden in soap into Australia. His name is Victor Twartz, and now he's facing life in prison, which, of course, for him is about 13 months, to be a dick, but that's likely the case. Actually, that's not even true. It's probably more like 13 minutes, not 13 months. 91 is up there, man. They, quote, police say it appears that Thwartz was scammed by a group of people he had befriended online before his trip. They declined to say whether Thwartz had been promised anything by the group. Thwartz told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that he met people in New Delhi whom he had befriended online. As he was about to board his plane to return to Sydney, he was handed a bag that he was told contained gifts for someone in Australia. Now, the cops say that there actually is really good evidence that he was tricked. But even though that's the case, they're like, yeah, we're going to try to lock him up anyway. Why the fuck would you do that? It's an old dude who doesn't know anything, who accidentally brought in drugs. Definitely let this guy go. But I'm going to go a step further. Even if he was bringing it in and he knew he was bringing it in, I still don't care. For fuck's sake, man, alcohol is legal. How many times have we spoken about this? Alcohol is one of the most disastrous drugs in the long term for somebody's health and well-being. There are so many drunk driving accidents every single year. There are so many people that get cirrhosis and die. There are so many people that get alcohol poisoning and die. And nobody fucking flinches and thinks, perhaps we should ban it because of all the social problems associated with it. You know what everybody's response is when you talk about alcohol? They say, hashtag freedom, bitch. It's going to be legal. It's going to stay legal. And I don't give a fuck what your opinion is. It is what it is. If you don't like it, don't drink it. That's what people say. Oh, there's an alcoholic who has problems and is ruining their life over it. That sucks. I feel bad for that person, but don't come and take away my drink I have, you know, three times a week with my buddies. I don't have a problem, and I should be able to drink it. We think that with alcohol, but when it comes to other drugs, weed, we're starting to think that now, but we're still not all the way there. But, oh, cocaine, forget it. That one's still super taboo. Oh, my God, you do, and you do a drug that makes you, like, really uppity and really energetic. It makes you want to do stuff. Oh, my God, that's incredible. We should ban that drug. So while we're at it, I guess we should ban Red Bull, right? How about Monster Energy? How about caffeine? How about coffee? How about cappuccino? How about espresso? How about all the different drugs? You say, oh, well, Kyle, those aren't as strong. True. But whiskey is significantly stronger than beer. Does that mean we should ban whiskey? Fuck no. Cocaine is a much more powerful upper than Monster Energy. Does that mean we should ban cocaine? Fill in the blank yourself here. This isn't that hard to figure out. So here's how you know the thing that you have made illegal is bullshit. When if you say an old person did it, the reaction is, ah, come on, man. This is not a big deal. Like if we were doing a story right now and I told you guys a 91-year-old person committed murder, what would your response? Fucking lock the guy up. Where's the debate? I don't see a debate here. The guy committed murder. He's a bad person. Lock him up. I don't give a fuck how old he is. That's irrelevant. He did something immoral and unjust and unethical. Lock him up. That's what you would say. That's what I would say. You want to know why? Because murder should be illegal. But if it's, oh, he's got some drugs. I don't say lock him up because I don't think that's really necessarily a bad thing or a wrong thing or an immoral thing or an unethical thing. And you probably don't either if he's 91 years old especially. So we should be more objective in how we think about these things. And we should really, it sounds like such a silly sentence to say, but it's true. We should only make things illegal that really should be illegal. And if it's not a violent crime or not something that's doing a tremendous amount of harm, it should be legal, drugs included. Okay. I'm out of time, guys. I love you. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place. Everybody have a great night. Peace.